This is the Real Talk University podcast, where your hosts, Andre and Christian, explore success stories outside of the classroom.
What is going on, Real Talk fam? Welcome back to a brand new episode of the Real Talk University podcast. This is our 8th interview of season 2. Again, it is absolutely flying by as we continue to push out new episodes every Thursday, like we've been doing for the past year. And just a little side note, last Friday, Christian and I celebrated 1 year of the podcast. We just want to extend our thank yous to everyone who's been following us on this journey. This past year has just been filled with incredible experiences that we could have never imagined having. And it's because of you guys, and it's because of the support that you guys have shown since day one. And we're just forever grateful for that. But today we have Caleb Williams, a good friend of mine, one of the more impressive people that I've been connected to, especially at the young age that he's at. He's just done a lot of amazing things. He's the founder and CEO of Better Wealth Solutions. The company's committed to showing people how to be more efficient with their money while also maximizing their future potential with financials. He shared a lot of knowledge in this interview, especially for young entrepreneurs and also just college students in general on how to better manage their finances, which is so important, especially at this stage in life when you're taking on things such as loans, debt, payments, expenses on the weekends and with food and all the different things that could happen when you're in college. So definitely be sure to listen to this episode. It's super important for long-term wealth. And Caleb's just an awesome, genuine dude, and you'll hear that instantly as soon as he gives his introduction, and I think you'll be hooked to this episode. But here's some takeaways, our three main takeaways from the episode. So the first takeaway is that working remotely is very plausible. So Caleb will go to describe how he manages his company with a remote team. And there's an idea that working remotely is inefficient and ineffective, but Caleb has found that to be false. Via video calls on Zoom or Skype and group work on platforms such as Slack or Asana, working remotely can be effective as any other method, such as an office space, a physical office location. So with remote work, your team could be located anywhere in the world, which is a huge advantage. So when considering starting a business or a side hustle or whatever else, definitely consider the option of going remote, especially if you're low on money or not everyone that is involved with the company or the startup is in the same location. The second is to follow your dreams, even if your loved ones or close friends don't support you. Caleb walked away from a very good financial situation at the job that he was at the time to pursue his dream of running a company. And even though his friends and family didn't fully understand his decision, why he left such a good position that he was in or that other people saw him to be in, he knew in his heart that it was the best for him and his future. So you're the only one that can make those decisions. You know best in your heart. So really try your best not to let others influence your decisions to that magnitude. The third and final takeaway from this episode was to hire people that believe fully in your vision and your company's why. The best employees are the ones that buy into your company's mission, not the ones who need the money. So a lot of the people that Caleb originally hired and who are now C-level executives at the company he manages were not offered initial salaries. And, given the situation of most startups and younger people like Caleb starting companies, not everyone is able to be paid, what they should be paid or what they would get at another company. So to have these people like his CEO that he mentions a few times in this interview, take on way less pay and way more risk than he could have by, taking a job elsewhere. It really shows that he was someone that was truly invested in, someone that truly believed in what Caleb was trying to build. So if you could find people like Caleb mentions he found for his company, definitely go do that. People will show up every day for a paycheck, but the people who will be energized to give their best effort at work every single day are the ones that you want in your company so you could see long-term success. So those are our three main takeaways. There's hundreds of other takeaways throughout this episode. So be sure to tune into the full episode And yeah, if you guys have any feedback, we're on Instagram, we're on LinkedIn, we're basically on all social platforms. So be sure to find us there. Christian and I are super receptive to your guys' feedback and your guys' outreach and messages and whatever else. So without further ado, here's Caleb Williams. How's it going, Real Talk fam? I just wanted to jump in here real quick before we start this new episode of Real Talk University with an offer that Christian and I have put together for you guys. Basically, as a thank you for listening and tuning into all of our episodes and supporting us along the way so far. So what we put together is the Podcast Blueprint ebook, which you'll have access to for free. Absolutely free. This is a downloadable PDF containing all the information, actionable steps, tips, resources, everything you need to launch your very own successful podcast in 30 days or less, exactly how Christian and I have done so. After reading our ebook, you'll be able to launch your own podcast today, book your dream guest for your interviews, and get ads and sponsors immediately. To claim your free copy today, visit the link at bit.ly/RTU ebook. That's B-I-T dot, that's a full stop, L-Y slash R-T-U ebook, E-B-O-O-K. Get your free copy today before this offer expires. Yeah, so this is Real Talk University. I'm Andre Haeckel Jr. This is Christian Bonnier. And basically, this is a weekly podcast to help inspire the younger generation, college students, high school students, to pursue their passions and opportunities outside of the platform. Caleb, thank you so much for joining us today. If you could just introduce yourself to our audience.
Hey guys, thank you so much for having me on. My name is Caleb Williams. I am doing this interview from Denver, Colorado. That's where I live. And I am the CEO and founder of a company called Better Wealth Solutions. I'm 23 years old and just pretty much help people all across the country understand that they are their greatest asset and help them be more efficient with their money. And we do that through education and actually implementation. And it's an honor to be on here, you guys. I'm a huge fan of both of you. And it's an honor to be on the show.
Appreciate that, man. So if you want to just go into like your schooling years, did you go to college? What did you learn from it if you did? And if you didn't, just let us know how that experience was.
Yeah, so my schooling is a little bit interesting. So I was homeschooled in high school. And what's unique about that is I actually still to this day struggle with dyslexia. So like reading is extremely difficult for me. And so I always had this limiting belief that I was never going to get through college. What ended up happening was I got my first job actually working at a chicken farm, became fascinated with how like money works. I'm like, man, I don't want to gut chickens the rest of my life. So like my money can start working for me. Got a job at a local bank and that bank in my community. And so I ended up going to school there and graduating in 3 years. I lived at home. I did a year of college in high school. And I really, quite frankly, don't credit my success to anything to do with college, but college gave me 3 years to figure out who I was and figure out how I learn from other people. And so I'm grateful that I got to work full time, go to school. It's crazy that I actually graduated. I always kind of like have to double take and be like, why did they give me that degree?
That's awesome, bro. And I also know that you ended up writing your own book. So how'd that happen?
Yeah, so I have a mission, and it's simple. It's to help people see and reach their highest potential. And I get so frustrated because most people are unable to live to their potential in life because of money. They use it as an excuse. We spend our whole life chasing something that is literally just a tool to help us live a better life and hopefully bless other people. And so at 21 years old, you call me crazy, but I've taken over the investment department at 19, okay? So I'm like the youngest person in the country to do that. And I'm like, have a big responsibility. I graduate. I was going to like do that full time. And in my heart, and that, like you guys understand, in my heart, I was like, I can't do this. Like if I really truly want to help people reach their highest potential, if I'm actually going to say that, then I have to actually do something about it. The thing that bothered me about the bank was I could only service the people that came to me. There's no way we could have had clients in over 31 states and come out with because of the compliance and stuff. So what ended up happening was I left and I look young now. Imagine, you know, me looking like I'm 15, right? And then number one, people are like, there's no way anyone will listen to you. Number two, there's no way anyone will do business with you online. And number three, how are you going to get anyone to work with you and believe in the vision? And number four, 87% of the people in our industry fail. So, like, it, on paper, it was a really bad idea. Even my parents were like, Caleb, like, I love that you're so ambitious, but, like, I think you should probably stay at the bank for a couple of years and, like, you know, settle in. And but again, you guys, like, in my heart, I knew that's what I had to do. And so when I got out, I'm like, okay, how am I going to, like, I want to start leveraging my message, because I firmly believe if people understand the message that we're sharing, everyone will want to be our client. And so one of the ways that we did that was come up with the book. And you're probably thinking, okay, you're dyslexic. How in the world did you write a book? I spoke it. So I came out with an outline, I spoke it, and then I had help. And I'm telling you, I could save anyone $20,000 just by telling you what not to do, because I learned all the things what not to do on first go around. But we do have a book. Over 3,000 copies are out, and it's probably one of our best lead sources along with our podcast. And that's between those two things, that's the leverage message that people hear about what we do, and then they come in through some of our funnels and do business with our company. And through that process, eight employees later, I have a team that believes solely in our mission of helping people. We're on a journey to try to impact 1 million people by 2025. And the only way that we do that is through getting on podcasts like yourself, getting more books out, and speaking to more people.
That's incredible. I just want to go back to, like, when you left the bank. Did you have any self-doubt? Because obviously the people around you were very critical of what you did.
Right. Oh, yeah. I had multiple times where I'm like, I made the biggest mistake of my life. And I also – here's the biggest thing. Have you guys read Think and Grow Rich? Okay. So one of the things that Napoleon Hill, you know, writes about in that book is figuring out the deeper root fear. And my deepest root fear, and I know I'm not alone on this, my deepest root fear was the fear of poverty and the fear of what people would think. And they're really the same thing. I felt like if I failed, that people would be like they, you still, like, I, you could justify, like, oh, I've accomplished so much. And I hate that mindset, right? Like, oh, we've accomplished so much. But, like, I was afraid of failing. And so the reason I would stay at the bank was to avoid that failure. And when I read that book for the second time, I'm like, I only live once. Better is the pain of discipline than the pain of regret. I do not want to regret anything in my life. And so, yes, I was terrified daily. I'm still terrified, right? I now I firmly believe I'm better off where I am now than where I would have been. But it was insane. And I was ultimately, because when I spotted and was self-aware to that underlying fear, I knew that there's two ways to live my life. One, embrace it, and one, just live in fear. And even though it would be disguised as success, and I think a lot of your audience can relate to that, because we can take the easy route, but in our heart, we know what we need to do.
Exactly right. So could you just, like, take us through the early stages of your company? Like, what did you learn through failure? What did you learn through success? How did you learn to manage your own business and things like that?
Yeah, no, good question. The first thing is, in any business, people have to understand the pain and the problem. So I could talk all about the issue, like, all about the amazing solutions that we have, but if I'm not, like, telling you how messed up you are financially, like, you're not going to care. So one of the big things that we got clear on as a company is, what problem are we solving? The big problem that we're solving is, when entrepreneurs are told that they have to choose between someday in retirement, who wants to wait till retirement, versus keeping all their money liquid and earning no rate of return. I had a dilemma, and it's a first world problem, but I had a dilemma on whether I should save my money and invest it for the future, or use it in my savings account and use it on other business activities. And when I realized that I didn't have to choose, that I could do both, I knew that solution and problem was real. So that was our message. So that's number one. And then the second thing is, then it's getting a system and a team. And the biggest transition we've done, we've had the past 2 or 3 years, is how do we take this message, but then how do we scale it to other people? And there's something called the 80% rule. If someone can do something 80% as good as you, delegate it. Because yes, I can fill out paperwork, but, like, it's not a good use of our time if we're going to try to scale. So the biggest learning lesson that I've learned is, I kind of split up our business into three elements: marketing, funnels, getting people to be like, aware to like want to be a buyer, and then how to serve someone and be, create a raving fan on the back end. Pat Flynn wrote a book, Superfans, and his whole mentality is like create a Superman community and mentality, and that's something that we're trying to do on the back end. We're trying to get people aware, and in between we're trying to educate and have the right people and processes to do that. And so we could walk through each step if you want, but those are the things that I've learned. And when I left the bank, I didn't know anything. Like I knew a little bit. I was a good talker. I was good in meetings, but we had to translate that. And I have someone on my team, Dan, who's like an integrator and takes all my crazy ideas and actually makes it happen. And I wouldn't be talking to you guys if I didn't have a team like that.
Yeah, that's sweet. And I mean, that leads into one of my more important questions is like, how did you go about building your team? I feel like a lot of people struggle with team building and the hiring process and knowing if this candidate's right for the job or not. What are some tips? I mean, obviously you've done a fantastic job of building, you know, a smaller company of people that truly believe and align with your vision. So like, what are some tips on that?
Well, and that's the biggest secret is everyone on our team are either clients or took a massive pay cut to come on our team originally. Like, trust me, nobody, like the guy that I was telling you about, Dan, he left a super prestigious job, took a massive pay cut, practically worked for free the first year. Why? Because after he became a client, he said, Caleb, I want to dedicate my life with you to help more people be financially free. So I would say if you had to summarize, quote unquote, my superpower, and it's not a lot, right? I have a lot of weaknesses, but it's getting people to buy into the vision. Simon Sinek in his TED Talk, Start With Why, has the phrase of people don't care what you do or how you do it until they know your why. And we are super, super intentional about our why. We like every single day, like we have a why wall, which is our why, pictures of our clients living to their living life to the abundant. And like that's why we wake up every day, is so that we can get more people living and being their greatest asset. Because I just think one of the biggest lies is defer, postpone, and hope. Like that's what financial planning is supposed to be. I'm like, man, that's like a really sucky way to live your life, you know. And why don't we invest in ourselves and be abundant and think about adding value today, and through value creation and through efficiency, more money will be created. And so that's ultimately our why. And people, when they hear it, they just want to be a part of it. And so like my assistant's a perfect example. She took a pay cut to come on board because, again, she believed in me. She believed in the company. And then what we've been doing a better job with recently, and this is a mistake that we've made, because we've had people come on that get super emotional, right? Like, we love you, Caleb. And then the love that turns into hate or not necessarily hate, but like it just emotion never lasts. And so one of the things is we're becoming more systematized, creating playbooks. And I've taken every personality test that you can imagine. And I'm a firm believer in it. And I think unemotionally, you have to make sure that there's a good fit from the integration standpoint before that you make a decision, because I would make a terrible assistant. Like I may love you guys so much and believe in you, but if you have me being your assistant, bad things are going to happen. And so it's just understanding that we still need to play to our strengths.
Right.
Yeah, that's so key, is like actually, you know, being self-aware of what you're good at and what you're not good at. And I think that's, you know, why you've had so much success so far. So talk about content. So I know, like you mentioned earlier, you have a podcast, you come on podcasts like this, you put out content. How important and vital has that been to building your business? Because I know a lot of people in the finance district and investment sectors don't typically think, you know, doing podcasts and stuff are really that important, but obviously you've really, you know, switched it up on them and proved them wrong. So how has that played a role in scaling and growing your mission?
It's been fun because now people are like, people know who we are, and we have people every day reaching out to us, asking us. And it's really humbling. And I share that in humility because there's people out there that have an idea that aren't acting on it because they're scared. And like, to let today be the day that you go for it. This is what I would say is I'm a huge Gary Vee fan. I believe you guys are as well. One thing that I had an epiphany, and I'm maybe a lot slower than others, is let's just document the journey. I don't want to perceive myself as the guru, but what I can tell you is I've learned from the best of the best. And so the beautiful thing about a podcast is I don't have to be the guru on every subject. I just have to be able to ask them questions. And so that's been huge, and it's also been a great connecting tool. So the ways that we've been able to integrate and sell is, you know, create content. So whether it's podcasts, the book, blog articles, and all it is, it's not salesy. It's just like, listen, if I'm a firm believer, if you understand what I know, you'll want to do it. Like that's my belief. So all I need to do is get you to understand why you need to take action, whether it's with me or someone else. Like you need to take action. And so that's really like, it's just creating that platform. And I feel like so many people just don't even know where to start. And I would recommend picking one thing and just intentionally doing it for a year. Most people won't be able to do it, by the way. If you do one thing, like, isn't it humbling? You guys get people every day reaching out about the podcast saying, guys, you've changed my life. Like, I've read in the comments and the reviews, you're making an impact on people's lives. And like, you guys have done about 4% of the talking, right? That's a perfect example of, like, you know, you creating an impact just by creating the platform. And so I don't know if I answered your question at all, but we're very intentional about getting stuff out. We're getting into YouTube, and the YouTube is just another example of taking the videos that we can do, putting it out, because I don't know if someone's a visual learner or audio learner or, you know, likes to read. It's ironic because people read the book and I'm like, man, I'm grateful that people are different than me, because I would never read a book. If you gave me a book, I wouldn't read it. I would listen to it, but I wouldn't read a book. But again, I would listen to your podcast because it's just how I learn.
Yeah, I think that's so important, especially nowadays. Just like, there's visual learners, there's people that learn better with audio, there's people that learn better than with written word. So just putting out content to each, you know, systemized process, I think is super important. So you're in a position now where you manage, you said, 8 people. So what is your daily routine look like? Again, you're younger than most, and you're still, I'm assuming, still figuring it all out. So how do you, you know, manage your day for podcasts like this?
Yeah, so great question. I do a lot of traveling. So travel is a little bit tricky. And if you guys have a person that you recommend or a podcast that you've done that people that travel that keep a routine, let me know. I will say when I'm in Denver, I wake up at 5:15 to 5:30. I go and I actually, here's my weekly, my planner, my focus planner. And I lay out 3 things that are like on my 3 rocks today. And then I also, because I'm in the business of people, I write people's names down. And for me, that triggers like, okay, I know I need to reach out, like shoot them a quick text or reach out to so-and-so. But I get really intentional, like if what's our goal and then what am I doing today? And so I really, really, really don't want to be in a reactionary mode. I don't want to be living off of someone else's priority list. I want to create and be intentional with the things that I need to do. And so that's been a game changer. I usually listen. Like today, I'm going through a book called Traction, and I walked and listened to that audio. Sometimes I'll read. I believe in the discipline of reading, even though reading's tough for me. Like, I make it a discipline. And then we have a weekly – we have a daily meeting with our team because we're all virtual. We have a daily meeting where every single person – talks about what they're going to do today. And then it's like an accountability session, because if you have the right people on your team, you don't have to micromanage them, but you do need to keep them accountable, because people are lazy. I'm lazy, right? But empower them to figure out that solution, but like, let's touch base. And so that's been a really good. And then I still am in a lot of meetings. I'm transitioning to being more in marketing and rainmaking, and we're building out a sales team. So I'm in the transition of like, my day looks like doing things like this, meeting with clients, working on marketing materials and joint venture partnerships. I'm also doing a lot of speaking around the country. So I'm trying to figure out things like that, and it's just calendar management. And then time blocking, like there's a priority that I have today that's going to take about 2 hours, and I'm not going to do it unless it's on my calendar. So it's like time blocking, and I do all of that first thing in the morning. And then this is what I aspire to be better at. I'm not good at this right now, is controlling my evening. Like before I go to bed, I want to journal, write a story, even if it's like a couple sentences, because I believe in the power of personal stories, and be very big into gratitude. I know you guys both are great friends with Dave Meltzer. One thing I love about that guy is he's a gratitude king, and like constantly being in a mindset of total gratitude is huge. And so that's one thing that I'm trying to incorporate in my life to be better, and also getting to bed on time before 11. And I'll be the first to say I'm not crushing it in that area.
Yeah, that's impressive though, because you've definitely stayed, like, I feel like the evening is the hardest time for anyone to stay disciplined with the kind of any routine, and you're able to do it. So I just wanted to go back on, you said you work remotely with your whole team?
Yeah, so my COO lives in Denver with me, and I have two other teammates that live in Denver, so we see each other daily. But yeah, my assistant and our, you know, we have people all over the country, including salespeople and coaches that aren't even part of that eight that are virtual.
Wow, that's impressive. So how have you learned to manage that, and how effective do you think it is compared to actually being in person in like an office building?
Yeah, so there's benefits to both. I think the benefit of being virtual is we wouldn't be able to, quote unquote, afford to have the team if we were spending a lot of money for an office. So I value people right now. And so it's just part of necessity, right? Like, and by the way, I'm not a fan of like, I can't afford, like, I hate that quote unquote, I can't afford it. So I won't say it, but you have to be a good steward with your money. And if we had a office building that we were paying money for, and so that would be tricky. The other cool thing is you can get people around the country, and with that mentality, you can maybe get a better person that would better fit the position. The challenging thing is I think people are more motivated in person, and it's easier to stay focused and be a part of the bigger and with the community. And so that's why we meet daily. That's why I talk to my assistant multiple times a day. I talk to the CMO of our company multiple times, or I wouldn't say multiple times a day, but try to at least do it in addition to our WIG meetings. And so that's the challenge, is if you do remote, you have to be very clear with expectations, and you've got to make sure that you've taken the time to pour into people, because Stephen Covey is all about efficiency in his 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, but he's like, you cannot be efficient with people. And effectiveness sometimes takes an hour conversation, and it's so worth it if it's someone on your team. And that's the kind of leadership that I think is vital to run a business.
Awesome.
No doubt.
What tools do you utilize to keep everyone on task? Do you use things like Slack, Zoom calls? Yeah.
So Zoom is huge. We use Zoom for meetings. Then we use Pipedrive for our CRM. So we're doing a lot of, like, you guys are in our CRM, and we're just very intentional about, like, the people in our life. Like, I know this world is off of relationships, and I'm grateful that you guys are going to be in, like, guys, we're going to live a long time. So hopefully I didn't jinx us. I'll knock on wood here. But, like, that's cool, you know, because the people that come in our life, like, so that's something that is really we're intentional about. And then we use Asana for task, and we just – we lay that out. And especially, like, I want, we call it the bus test. I want to be able to get hit by a bus, and for this thing to continue, like, our mission of impacting 1 million people by 2025, like, at least spend 2 days feeling sad, but then you can, like, don't not feel sad. But, like, at the end of the day, we want to create the system to be, you know, flawless. And we're not there yet, but, like, we will be soon. And that most businesses are not businesses. They're just a person that's not working for someone, but they're a slave to themselves. And by the way, I'm still in that category, but we're getting real close to switching that over to where we're going to impact people regardless if I'm on the clock or not.
Yeah, that's sweet. And you keep mentioning the goal of impacting 1 million people by 2025. Where did that come from?
That came from because I think it's impossible. So I wanted a goal to be like, okay, there's no way in the world we can do that. But I'll tell you this, once we've put that on paper and started telling people, like, in every talk I give, I share that. You'd be shocked how many – I had a guy from California call me the other day, a big-time financial advisor. And he said, Caleb, talk to me. He heard my whole talk. Talk to me about how you're going to impact 1 million people by 2025. And you know what came from that conversation? We are collaborating – and together, he's going to help us with that. So the only way that we can do that is if we use collaboration with people like you and other people that see that. And the only way that we do that is to get people to buy into that vision. And someone's got to be crazy enough to actually put that on paper. And so that's what drives us. So everything that I do today ultimately is setting us up to where we're going. And so that's, you know, that's why the million. And if we achieve half of that, it's still going to be, I hope we celebrate that. And I'm not a big in celebrating things. That's something I need to improve and do better at. But that's just where our company, that's like the big overall hairy audacious goal that we're headed towards.
That's sweet. And obviously goal setting, I feel like you're a goal setter. It's very important to what you do. So if you could kind of walk us through maybe a process that you have to set, maybe it be daily goals, weekly goals, monthly goals, yearly goals, just because I think it's super important, especially for people listening to understand how to set goals and why they need to.
Right. And I also, so we have four steps to wealth. Okay. And if we have time, I would like to break that down for people. But step number one is having clarity over your why. And you know, in the financial planning world, people talk about rate of return, ROR. Everything is based on ROI. It drives me insane, you guys. But ROR could also stand for return on result. And that's the first, that's like the secret to this whole thing is ROR instead of rate of return, return on result. For instance, clarify what you actually want. Like, what do you want? Like, what do you want to like be, like you're dead. What do you want to be? What happened kind of deal? What does financial independence mean to you? Like, what does, clarify that. And it might be tough, but like, how in the world can you create a goal if you don't know where you're headed? Alice in Wonderland, there's a quote in that book when Alice is at the fork in the road and the cat goes like, Alice, where are you going? And she says, I don't know. And the cat says, if you don't know, any road will get you there. So take the time, and there's a lot of people listening to this that don't know that answer, and that's okay. But don't focus on tactics and goals, because that's why you're getting burnt out, and that's why you start something and a week later you don't finish it. It's because you don't fully have clarity on why you want to get where you want to go. So ROR, get really clear on the result. And then instead of focusing on, for instance, the wrong thing for me to do is measure our success by looking at the amount of people we've impacted. I know so you can measure yourself with that number, but to create a goal around that is tricky. To create goals, it's like, what activities do you need to do to help you set that up? For instance, if your goal is to get 5 clients a week and you knew that you had to take 20 meetings, a better decision would be book 20 meetings instead of getting 5 clients. Because at the end of the week, you could say, I didn't get 5 clients. But a better goal would be, I'm going to do 20 because I know if I book 20, that's the activity that I need to do to produce the 5. And then if you book 20 and you get 0, let's go look at your presentation, bro, because I bet it's not good, right? But it's really like focusing on, so many people are focused on what's called the lag measure. And what you really have to be focused on is the activities that you're doing throughout your life that's going to produce the results. So it's getting clear on where you want to go and then really being able to break down what activities can you do this year, this month, this week, this day that can help you get to where you want to go. And I'm simplifying it. Like, there's books, and I would highly recommend people look into it because it will make or break you.
Yeah, and you mentioned Dave Meltzer earlier, and he actually has a really good way to explain exactly what you just talked about. I was on a call with him yesterday, and he basically said, you know, when people go to set goals, they know when you drive from California to New York, they know where New York is. They could see New York. But to get to New York, you only have to see 3 feet in front of you the entire time. You can't see New York physically from where you start. You know where it is, and you only have to see 3 feet in front of you. So I love the way he explained that, and it's very similar to what you just went over. So
amazing. I love that analogy.
Yeah.
I'll be borrowing that as well.
That's awesome. So, I mean, I'd love for you to hit on the other three steps, because yeah. I know you just mentioned there's 4 steps to wealth.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this and you're like, I want to become wealthy, but I don't know how, if you take these 4 steps, whether you have $1 million to your name or you're broke, this will set you apart, okay? Step number one is think of a human being. So I draw a stick figure, and that's you. So get clarity on who you are, where you're going, what your why is, your ROR, return on result. The second thing, if you guys have any questions, you can interrupt me, but the second step is instead of looking at where you're going to invest your money, you know, efficiency with time is accomplishing what you want to accomplish faster. Why aren't we talking about efficiency with money? No one's talking about how to be more efficient with our resources and time as it relates to our wealth. We categorize it. It's all about rate of return. But I like to say, if we have clarity on where we're going, how do we look? We have to look at our assets, which are the things that we own or the money that we have. We have to look at our cash flow, the money coming in. We have to look at our liabilities. We have to look at our debts and things where the money is going out. And we have to ask the question, how can I be most efficient with the resources I currently have to accomplish the goal that I want? It has nothing to do with where you invest your money. Has nothing to do with should I invest here or not. It's all about efficiency. It's looking at the full picture rather than just looking at one element. And that's key. So number one, get clarity on where you want to go. Number two, be efficient with everything. Number three, create a surplus. So save money. Most people are not saving money. And, you know, newsflash, like, be disciplined and pay yourself first. A great book on this is Richest Man in Babylon. A tenth of what you make is yours to keep. I like to encourage, we show our clients ways to save 20% of their money if they can. And sometimes we work up to that, but create a surplus. And then here's the most exciting thing. So step number three is save and create a surplus. Step number four is use that money strategically. And for most people, that's not investing in some index. That may be investing in education to make yourself make more money. Could be investing in marketing. It could be investing in real estate. But here's the secret, is it has to be something that produces not just a rate of return, but helps you accomplish what you want, what you're set out on this earth to accomplish. So maybe an index fund might give me 12%, but if I'm telling you that I want to impact people through business and I'm diversifying my money, that could be detrimental. So I got to clarify where are the best activities for me to use my money, and through that surplus, I need to invest in those things. And ultimately, that we could talk about being efficient, creating surplus, and using it, but if we don't have clarity on why, it's a waste of time. You could have clarity, but if you're not efficient, you could be creating a surplus with a fraction of the money. But once we create that surplus and know how to multiply it, it's game over. My book is just a better way to save and use your money. So we talk mainly on the step two, three, and four, and we show people tactics to better save and use your money, where your money can continue to grow and you can use it at the same time kind of deal. But I'm very clear, like, don't go and skip to my book without understanding the four steps, because again, a tactic can help, but if you don't get the full big picture, it's just another product, another strategy that's maybe marginally better, but it's not going to change anyone's life. Yep.
Could you just go back into the efficiency with money? I'm just like, could you just like clarify that a little bit more? You're saying like allocate your money to more efficient methods of growth?
Yeah. So here's an example, is if you're telling me you want to be a business owner and all your money's locked up into an investment, we may want to look at, does it make sense to liquidate that investment to invest in your business? Or you have credit card debt, does it make sense to knock off that credit card debt and take the money that you were paying to 21% interest and put it, you know, back into your surplus? Or you could be being inefficient with your taxes, paying way too much, and just by talking to someone on our team or accountant, you could save 10% in taxes. Well, that was money that was going to the government that's now you're keeping. Those are three examples of how to be more efficient. And there's just by tracking your spending, you just become more aware. You're like, wow, I like eating out's expensive. And by the way, I'm not into this whole, you know, skimp your way to wealth. I'm just saying be aware of what money you're spending, and that's part of the efficiency too.
Yeah, those were super helpful steps. So I'm assuming maybe you have like a podcast or an article that people could listen to if they just want like maybe more insight on the four steps.
Yeah, two things. My podcast is Better Wealth, and my first and last name, Caleb, my last name, GUILLIAMS. That's where I give a lot of interviews and short podcasts on money. The other thing is my book, The And Asset. You can get a free copy. All I'm asking is people just pay the cost of getting them the book. Is And Asset, ASSET.com, or they can go on to Kindle and get it for 99 cents. Like, I'm literally want to get this out to as many people as possible. And the book goes more into the details and tactics, whereas the podcast is all over the place with different strategies. And and reach out to me on social media because I love interacting and helping people reach their highest potential.
Sweet. We're going to get into what we call the lightning round. Thank you for, you know, all the responses so far. You've crushed it so far. A lot of super valuable advice and really cool stories. So the first question of the lightning round is just to see if you have any questions that you'd like to ask us before.
I mean, I love what you're doing. What's the most common response that you get from listeners that listen to your podcast?
It's very similar to Christian and I's response. It's just like, we do these interviews with really no expectations of what's going to happen. And through doing all these interviews, we're just learning of all the different ways people are, you know, pursuing their passions and starting businesses and going into entrepreneurship outside of the classroom. It's just, it's really cool because our reactions are the same to other people. Like, they're like, we're inspired by your podcast. Yep. So are we. Like, we have the pleasure of delivering that to an audience, but also to ourselves, because we get to learn with them, grow with them, and it's really cool to have like that, you know, go hand in hand. So it's been a unique experience for sure.
I love that. And last question, because I could ask you guys questions for hours, but I won't, is what's the biggest thing that you've learned starting the podcast? You've been able to interview amazing people all across the country and world. What's the number one takeaway that you've applied to your life because of jumping in to the podcast game?
I would say for me that success is more in reach than I would think, because like with all the people that we interview, it seems like what they've accomplished is so far, like so far out there, and you'll never be able to actually get there yourself. But they break down like the step by step and the failures, and when they were eating shit, like Gary V likes to say, like they didn't always have all the glamour and they just put their head down and work. So that's what's inspired me to just do the same and just know that one day it's all going to work out. Like what Meltzer said with the 3 feet ahead of you.
Yeah.
Perspective.
And for me, I think my biggest takeaway would be that, wow, I just completely lost my train of thought. Oh yeah. My biggest takeaway would be that like there's really no secrets to what you're trying to accomplish. Like, you really have to believe in your own vision. As long as you continue to self-educate, stay patient. Patience has really been one of the key things. But if you could feel good about what you're doing, if you could stay patient with what you're doing and just continue to surround yourself with like-minded people, like we've been doing with the podcast, which is kind of cool, then you're gonna end up exactly where you want to be. So I think a lot of times, especially going into it, is like, what's the secrets? Like, how did you make this amount of money? Like, what exactly did you do? And there's it's different for everyone. Everyone has like a unique path to get there, but the same qualities resonate in every single story. It's patience, it's feeling good about what you do, and it's surrounding yourself with the right people. And those are my takeaways, I think.
I love it. And that was money. So thank you.
Yeah, of course, man. So the first question we have for the lightning round is, if you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, who would they be and why?
So great question. I would have dinner with President Lincoln, because I think the way that he managed just the time, and I think he also is an extremely on it, like he would share his downfalls with and successes, but I just have a ton of respect for him. I would have dinner with Dale Carnegie and try to soak up as much info as I could. That I'm rereading How to Win Friends and Influence People, and I gave his book away as a wedding gift. Hopefully people weren't offended by that, but like I just think every single person needs to read that book. And I just hear the wisdom through listening and reading his stuff. And the third one, man, that's a great question. To be completely frank, it would be Jesus, because I, you know, he's created a massive movement. Myself personally, like I am a Christian, and so I would be super curious like to hear just that. But I mean, I don't know if that counts,
yeah,
but I'm gonna say it.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he's a real dude, so you'll get your chance.
Yeah, so if you were in our situation right now, 19 years old, in college, what side hustle would you want to start, and then how would you go about doing it?
Great, great question. What do you guys want to accomplish? Like, what's your goal?
is to continue doing this, but
monetize
having it, you know, back us financially. And I think that I see where you're going with this is like it really depends on what you're passionate about and what you care about to go out and really do something that is effective and means something to people. So, yeah, it really is to continue with what we've been doing. It's just to
So this is what I would do is I would you guys and I know some of your story because we've talked, right? Is you came from not even knowing like what a podcast was to being on the phone with some pretty amazing people and becoming friends with some pretty amazing people. And your transformation has been, you know, I mean, you guys are like, you know how many, you know how blessed you guys are to be 19 years old and be having these conversations and knowing what you know? It's incredible. So instead of, again, taking the route that I'm taking is instead of being the guru, create the atmosphere where people can, there can be change lives. People will pay for outcomes. People will pay for outcomes. So the outcome that you're helping people with, and this is what, just take this with a grain of salt, but what I really see you guys becoming powerfully, like powerfully impacting people is not through some sponsorships, but creating an environment and an atmosphere where people can come together and that information and confidence can get transferred through, whether it's a mastermind, whether it's an event, or whether it's just you know, I'm not going to say coaching because coaching is a little bit overused, but you have a lot to give. And so I would look into what it looks like to have a course, not necessarily like just mainly for the fact that like just share, just document what you've created. But more importantly, I would be really interested if you guys created an event and an atmosphere where people could come together and with no agenda other than the fact of just connecting. And there's value for that. And so charge for that. That's the immediate thought that came out. I would want it, like, to really break that down, I would want to spend a day with you. And after that day, it would be really clear, I believe, what you guys should do.
Yeah, we've been talking recently about how we would go about hosting a mastermind with, like, some of the guests that we've had. Because, obviously, people would be willing to pay for a ticket to be in a room with these people and just pick their brains. So we've definitely been planning that out.
So here's an example. Hopefully you're open for me just being frank. So I have a... My blueprint costs people $997 to like implement all these strategies. Okay, because of you guys, because you're young, because I believe in what you're doing. I would not only discount that, but I would create an affiliate program with you. Meaning, your people will get massive value because they know you, and you guys could figure out a way to get paid by helping me help more people. That, my friend, is value creation, and that's how you can do that with multiple people. That's what I'm saying is, and that's the beautiful thing about masterminds. And if you guys have a following, there's value there, and it could look, instead of just charging money for the event, you could break even on the event and make money on the back end through having people like me, you know, share valuable things, and then some people are going to take action, and then you know that there's going to be revenue shared with that.
Right.
100%. Yeah, we'd love to like hop on a follow-up call or something and explore different opportunities for that. And then this just goes into our last question is what's one thing that you know now that you wish you knew when you were 19?
Oh, I know exactly what I would say. Stop caring what people think of you. Be respectful. Never be a jerk. But the moment that you stop caring, and that was about 22 for me. Like I could say at 19, I was confident, right? 22 is when I was like, you know what? I care about what you guys think about me, but I really don't. And when you get to that place and it comes with clarity of knowing what you want, and it comes with a confidence of like knowing that you don't have to brag or you don't have to put other people down to make you feel more significant. When you get honest with yourself, man, like it's such an amazing life. And then you can really be free because at the end of the day, you guys, if I fail and lose everything, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. Whereas 2 years ago, I wasn't able to say that in integrity. And I don't want to fail, by the way. Like I'm not afraid of what you will think or what my mom will think or what my friends will think because I know what I'm doing is what I need to be doing. And so I would be failing my future self by not acting on what can happen.
I think that's a perfect way to end off. That's like probably the best life advice you could give, because no matter how successful you are, no matter if you fail or not, it's all about, light just popped on. But yeah, like you said, it's just all about how you feel about yourself. And even if you find a ton of success, if you just don't love yourself, then you're never going to actually find true internal success. So it's incredible advice.
100%, guys. I appreciate you, and thank you so much for having me on your show.
Hey guys, show some love for the Real Talk University podcast by subscribing and leaving a review on the Apple Podcast app. See you all next week.